You're tuned to KUOW. Thomas Drake's first day at the National Security Agency was September 11th, 2001. He was a high-ranking member of the NSA for years, but today he works full-time at an Apple store in Maryland. In 2010, Thomas Drake became the first whistleblower charged by the Obama administration. Drake says he wanted to keep the government chained to the Constitution, and ultimately, that's why he became a whistleblower between 2003 and 2005 against the NSA over a program he found was wasting money, enriching contractors, and duplicating an existing successful program. Eventually, all the charges were dropped. He pled guilty to one misdemeanor count of misusing an NSA computer, the equivalent, he said, of using Facebook at work. He got 1 year probation and 240 hours of community service. Behind schedule and over budget, the Trailblazer project he was complaining about was canceled. Thomas Drake joins us from NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. Hello, Mr. Drake.
Hi.
Appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
What was the first thing you noticed happening in the NSA that set off an alarm for you?
Well, I came face-to-face with a stark, dark reality that the government had unchained itself from the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment in the deepest of secrecy, without any debate, no knowledge by the public. And this was a direct result of 9/11, and that was in the first few weeks and months after 9/11. The Pandora's box had been opened up, and in parallel with that, there had been this massive program, the multi-billion-dollar program called Trailblazer, that they ended up doubling down on to deal with what they thought was this enormous threat. And that simply became a massive fraud, waste, and abuse program that spent all kinds of monies and ultimately died an ignominious death in 2006. And in this same period, I was also confronted with the unconscionable reality of enormous intelligence failures, failures that led directly to NSA's own culpability in terms of not protecting Americans or keeping people out of harm's way.
Specifically, what did you see when you say unchained from the Constitution?
Well, there had been a legal regime put into place since 1978 called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and it came about during the 1970s, a decade in which I grew up as a very young adult. And high school, and remember the Pentagon Papers and Watergate, and President of the United States resigning his office in part in terms of the articles of impeachment that have been drawn up by the House of Representatives for abuse of instruments of national power against the American people. And it came out, a lot of this came out in the Pike and Church committee hearings, and so it led to this act that provided the secret side of government under the Fourth Amendment thresholds of having probable cause, that if you suspected a U.S. person of engaging in foreign intelligence and in harm against the United States, then you would go before this secret court with that affidavit information, and they could say yay or nay in terms of granting you a warrant. And the reason is because of the abuses that NSA itself had engaged in over the previous decades. And so for 23 years, it was the prime directive. You do not spy on Americans without a warrant. And although they had been modified five times prior to 9/11 to keep up with the technology and the times, and there were options or exceptions in which you could actually do what was called hot pursuit. If the threat was significant enough, then you could pursue that threat, but you would still go back to the court for the warrant. They completely abandoned that legal regime. And I knew that not only had the wheels come off, we were in an entirely different vehicle. And it was an anathema form of government, a government I no longer recognized, a government that was contrary to the Constitution, and a Constitution that I had taken an oath four times in my government career to protect and defend.
So the wheels came off, examples being what we've seen in the releases of information through WikiLeaks by Snowden, by Bradley Manning.
Well, the Manning disclosures were through WikiLeaks. The Snowden disclosures have been through a small number of journalists. Now increasing, they've increased the number of other media outlets that are now also reviewing and publishing these extraordinary disclosures. I've been reliving the past 12 years as a result of the Snowden disclosure over the past eight months. It's extraordinary, but none of this is surprising to me. I mean, I was eyewitness, literally eyewitness to the unchaining of the Constitution and the stark reality that what the government chose to do in the deepest of secrecy was to simply conduct mass surveillance on an enormous scale, turning the United States of America into the equivalent of a foreign nation for the purpose of Dragnet electronic surveillance.
You know, Thomas Drake, you joined the Air Force in 79. Your father served in World War II. You talk about respecting the government, loving the government. You realized your boss wasn't going to try and fix this. What were you thinking?
Well, I could have remained silent, but I knew if I remained silent as a senior executive and accountability to the oath that I took, as well as the public and the American taxpayer, although I worked in a very secret agency called the National Security Agency, if I remained silent, then I was complicit, that I'd be an accessory to a crime. I mean, these were decisions made at the highest levels of the government, right out of the White House. And I remember the moment of truth for me where I said, you know, I'm not going to remain silent. I have got to confront this. Because it was not necessary. I knew we had the technology, we had the very best of American ingenuity and innovation to not only go after the threat, but also to do so without violating the rights and the liberties of U.S. persons.
This was a different program. This was that was already going, operating under the government.
Well, it's two. There was one that was supposed to catapult the NSA into the 21st century. The other one that I came face to face with right after 9/11 was called Stellar Wind. That was the secret surveillance program. And that was the one that was particularly pernicious, because they decided that because of 9/11, because of the fundamental failure of the system that did not keep people out of harm's way, that they were just simply going to go to the phone companies and other internet service providers and just say, hey, we need all the data. And so this was all done without the secret court even in the loop at all. And so a whole series of programs that fell under Stellar Wind were put into place, starting with phone numbers. And that began right after 9/11. And that included, as we've seen in the Snowden disclosures, one of the very first disclosures, that included Verizon even then turning over all phone records to NSA.
Thomas Drake, what reaction did you get from your immediate boss and the bosses above you when you talked about the concerns you had?
Well, they avoided the truth. They said, you don't understand. We live in exceptional times, and it requires exigent conditions. And so, you know, it was the ends justifies the means. We just need the data. We just need the data because we don't know where the threat is. And the only way we're going to really discover if there's any other threats is to have access to as much data as possible. I confronted the lead attorney in the Office of General Counsel after having gone directly to my supervising official, who was a number three person at NSA and who had happened to be my hiring manager. When I confronted that attorney, he said, you don't understand, Mr. Drake. The White House has approved the program. It's all legal. And so, as soon as he said all legal, the hair on the back of my neck went up because I was reminded of Richard Nixon.
So when you realized you weren't getting any help that way, where did you turn?
Well, I became a material witness and whistleblower with two 9/11 congressional investigations investigating what had happened. And that took place in the 2002 timeframe. And then in 2003, I began I was a whistleblower for several years, about 2.5+ years, almost 3 years, with the Department of Defense Inspector General, where they came to NSA looking at Trailblazer as well as Thin Thread. That was the alternate program that already solved the heart and core of the requirements for Trailblazer. But instead of a $4 billion program, they had done it for less than $4 million. And so I provided thousands and thousands of pages of documents to both the 9/11 investigators, the congressional investigators, as well as the Department of Defense Inspector General's office, to no avail. And that went well into the 2005 timeframe. When they issued a final report. And then I confronted General Alexander, the outgoing director of NSA, four-star general, also the commander of Cyber Command. I confronted him in November of 2005. And the retaliation was swift and severe. I ended up, they reorganized the engineering directorate in where I worked, and I ended up down at the National Defense University teaching leadership and information strategies, out of sight, out of mind. Then I made a fateful decision. I made a fateful decision in 2006 after having spent all those years blowing every proper channel that existed under the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act within NSA and then outside of NSA, but still within the government. Having gone to the congressional committees, having gone to staffers on both the House and Intel, as well as others, I made a fateful decision, and that was the final avenue available, which is you go to the press. And so in February of 2006, I anonymously made contact with a reporter from the Baltimore Sun regarding what I knew.
Why wasn't that a violation of any laws?
It was not a violation of any laws. I wasn't providing any classified or national defense information to the reporter. There was an administrative policy that if you had unauthorized contact with a reporter, then there was administrative penalties up to and including being let go, meaning if they didn't trust you, they could suspend or revoke your security clearance, which, you know, was a condition of continuing employment.
What happened to you?
Well, I was disclosing what I knew as a whistleblower to the reporter over a period of about 20 months until in November of 2007. I've been placed under investigation, and that's a result of the James Risen, Eric Lichtblau article. The government actually thought I was the source for that New York Times article, which was a blockbuster article revealing for the first time the existence of what the government had called conveniently the terrorist surveillance program. It was never known as that in the years prior. It was part of a larger president surveillance program that had been launched with a secret directive signed by President Bush the first week of October 2001. And so, you know, I ended up being raided by the FBI after extraordinarily intensive surveillance, both physical and electronic. They had a dozen agents that came to my house. They seized all kinds of property, papers and electronic media and computers. They also raided my office down at the National Defense University, where I was, you know, a visiting professor at Bayer for Science, and my car. And that began the nightmare. And I cooperated with the FBI for a period of about 5 months. In April of 2008, I resigned from NSA with no adverse action noted in my personnel files after the chief prosecutor said, how would you like to spend the rest of your life in prison, Mr. Drake, unless you cooperate with our investigation? And then 2 years later, under the Obama administration, not under the Bush administration, they ended up indicting me after I had been secretly charged in March of 2010. And that was a 10 felony count indictment, 5 under the Espionage Act, 1 for obstruction of justice, and 4 for making false statements to FBI agents.
That was when, I like how you said, that was when the nightmare started. It sounded like it started a lot sooner when you thought you were following the rules of the Whistleblower Protection Acts and yet were not getting support that you thought you would get from the system.
Well, I didn't consider that a nightmare. I just considered that they were covering up and chose not to confront, because they made these decisions at such a high level within the government. They weren't going to back off from that, and they considered it was all for national security, and so that justified it. It didn't matter what the Constitution said. It didn't matter what the existing – so you have to remember, violating the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act had severe sanctions, severe criminal penalties under Title 18 of the U.S. Code, $10,000 fine for every instance of a violation, and 5 years in prison. And here I was being criminalized for having blown the whistle on government wrongdoing and illegality.
They were conflating the two.
Precisely.
At this point, you didn't have your job. You couldn't even afford lawyers. In the end, you lost your pension. You lost everything, correct?
Yes. In fact, at the point I was indicted, my private attorney, who I had for the previous 2 years, and I had run out of money, I ended up having to file paperwork with the court, and I was declared indigent by the court. I simply had no monies left. And we were unable to find any other attorney that represent me. And my private attorney said it's going to cost between $1 and $3 million to defend you privately between now and the point of your trial.
Why has the Obama administration been so harsh on whistleblowers, do you think?
Well, it's been relentless. It's been ruthless.
Worse than Bush, I've heard you say.
Far, far worse than Bush. I mean, he has charged more Americans with espionage, a World War I era statute that was designed to go after real spies, not whistleblowers. But he's charged more people under that World War I era act than all other administrations combined. It's unprecedented.
Why do you think that is?
Because he is ruthless about unauthorized, quote-unquote, unauthorized leaks, although the biggest leaker is the government.
Would you do it again, or would you see some laws change before you think whistleblowers should do it again?
Well, you know, that's why I continue to be an advocate, activist, and continue to speak out on what the enormous risks and dangers are. I mean, look, I took an oath. I mean, if the oath doesn't matter, then hey, then our quote unquote American exceptionalism that was defined by the Constitution as an idea and how to best govern ourselves, just a piece of paper. It's a quaint document that was better used in a different place. And if we're not use it, why don't we give it to somebody else?
What's that oath you're talking about?
The oath to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
And that includes the waste, fraud, and abuse you were encountering.
That's precisely correct. And that's a definition, whistleblower as a reasonable belief that government is engaged in wrongdoing in terms of where I used to work, illegality, fraud, waste, and abuse, or threats to public safety or health. There were statutes under which I was supposed to be protected. It turns out it was an exposure policy.
An exposure policy rather than a protection policy.
That is correct.
All right, Thomas Drake, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Well, the good thing is I can talk to you as a free human being, and I can't even begin to tell you what it means to be free when the government spent so many years doing everything it could to take away those freedoms and liberties.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you are. Thomas Drake will be talking in Tacoma this Saturday at the Washington State History Museum at 7:30. He's a former NSA senior executive turned NSA whistleblower. He'll be joined by a former ethics advisor to the Justice Department who's also a whistleblower. You can find out more at KUOW.org.